Hi, everyone. Welcome to Febrile, a culture podcast about all things infectious disease. We use consult questions to dive into ID clinical reasoning, diagnostics, and antimicrobial management. Thank you so much for your patience with getting some new episodes here on the podcast. I know there's been a little bit of a break as I try to keep up, but I have several episodes on their way to you, and I'm super excited to share with you the most recent recording, which is live from ID Week 2025 in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm joined by Drs. Camille Cotton and Roy Shamali to discuss a case and some of the challenges in diagnosis and management of refractory HSV infection in immunocompromised patients. This episode was recorded at ID Week 2025 during one of the affiliated events. Our guests today and my role as moderator were sponsored speakers by iCurious Anti-Infective Cures for the event. However, this content was planned, produced, and reviewed solely by Febrile. Hope you enjoy. Hi, everyone. Welcome to our session today. We are live from the ID Week Learning Lounge. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sarah Dong. I'm your host and moderator today, and we have something special. This is actually going to be a Febrile podcast live recording here from ID Week, and I hope some of you are already listeners, but if not, Febrile is a culture podcast about all things infectious disease, and so I'm very excited to have two illustrious guest stars here with me. I'm going to let them say hello and introduce themselves, and we'll get started.
Thank you. I'm Camille Nelson-Cotton, and I'm the Clinical Director of Transplant and Immunocompromised Host Infectious Diseases at Massachusetts General Hospital, and I'm really delighted to be with you today.
I'm Roy Shamali. I'm also an infectious disease specialist, professor of medicine, and the chair of the infectious disease department at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas, and I'm very happy to be surrounded by my colleagues here.
Some rock stars here. Okay, so before we talk about a case today, I always ask one question on our podcast. As everyone's favorite cultured podcast, if our guests can share a little piece of culture, basically just something non-medical that they enjoy. Maybe I'll start with you, Roy.
It was me? Okay, thank you. So I had to think a little bit about that, but really, you know, in my mind, it's like really what give me not really happiness, maybe serenity. And you're going to be surprised, like sipping coffee every morning. This is how I start my day. It's the best time of the day for me. I think so. So this is my culture moment.
Love it.
So I've had the good fortune of recently traveling to India, where I went to the heart and lung and abdominal transplant meetings and visited CMC Vellore Medical School, and also went to Brazil. And I was so interested in just hearing about the culture of different transplant programs throughout the world. And I think there's just so much to learn from each other. So that's my somewhat geeky, but cultured for the day.
Perfect. Okay, guys, so Roy and Camille are going to help me out with a case today. I'm going to get started, and then pretty soon you'll see some pictures up on the screen. So we have a 65-year-old woman with acute myeloid leukemia who underwent a mismatched, unrelated donor allogeneic stem cell transplant. She received fludarabine with busulfan conditioning and post-cyclophosphamide for GVHD prevention. Her course is complicated by acute upper gastrointestinal and skin GVHD, and so she began systemic steroid treatment about day plus 40 post-transplant. She was on HSV infection prophylaxis with valacyclovir dosed at 1 gram. She developed some ulcers. I'll show you some pictures here. She has some ulcers on her buccal mucosa, lips, nose, and then two on her tongue, which popped up around day 48. So you can see some examples here. Given these new lesions and concern for malabsorption, she was changed to IV acyclovir, 10 mg per kg, dosed 3 times daily. HSV PCR was sent from a lesion and confirmed to be HSV. She didn't really improve over the next week to week and a half, so at this point has been transitioned to IV foscarnet therapy. So I have to ask our experts, what do you guys think? Is this refractory HSV infection?
Oh, maybe I can get started. So yeah, defining refractory is very important. And for years, we didn't have any kind of standardized definition for refractory HSV infection. We developed one for CIV, but now for HSV, from the transplant-associated viral infection forum, worked with Tamil and other experts to define for clinical trial use. What we put there is someone not mucocutaneous lesions, not improving or having new lesions after at least 7 days of good anti-HSV therapy, making sure the right route and the right dosage as well. And this is meant for clinical trials, but also it can be used at the bedside when it comes to refractory infection.
Definitely. It's really important to make the diagnosis of refractory disease and then think about sending resistance testing. Resistance testing can take numerous weeks to return. So while we're waiting, we manage this as a refractory disease, similar to how we manage, you know, we think about CMV, but this is sort of a different, especially because there are much longer wait times in getting the resistance testing back.
Yeah. So do you guys see this outside of stem cell transplant?
Yeah, absolutely. First, I want to say that it's not uncommon, this kind of scenario that you presented, especially someone becoming heavily immunocompromised, immunosuppressed early on after transplant, or even after induction chemo for leukemia patient, lymphoma patient on multiple line of therapy, myeloma. I can go on and on outside the transplant where you may encounter this kind of refractory and or resistant herpes simplex infections.
And we do see it sometimes in people with HIV, and then we see it in the solid organ and other immunocompromised populations. It's fairly rare, but when it happens, it can be quite devastating. So it's really important to recognize the clinical syndrome.
Yeah. And we have some pictures up here just listing out some of these risk factors that we think about for refractory HSV infection. And so, you know, at this point, I mentioned that our patient has been on IV Voscarna therapy, which I'm sure many people in the audience have struggled with, I will say. You know, is this what we're stuck with, IV Voscarna and all its limitations? Are there other options available to us?
So I would say, unfortunately, we are stuck with Voscarna alternative therapy for this kind of infection. Although having lots of experience with Voscarna, where we had to use it on many occasions for CINV infection or for herpes simplex, we know it is an effective drug, but it becomes ineffective when it causes and high incidence of serious toxicity. We're all familiar with nephrotoxicities from Voscarna, as well as electrolyte imbalance and many other toxicities as well.
In addition to Voscarna, in very specific cases, we sometimes can use topical antiviral therapy, topical cidofovir. Interestingly, we need to have that compounded, and often the compounding agent, not the drug itself, but the compounding agent can be quite expensive, and it's often not covered by insurance. So I've had prices in the range of $1,500, $2,000 just for some basically topical therapies. So sometimes it seems like a good choice, but can be very challenging to either obtain and or get covered by insurance.
And I would add to that, Bihana, caution the audience. Sometimes you have big lesions that use topical cidofovir. It has to be compounded. We want to make sure that it's compounded the right way, but it can still cause some side effect, can get absorbed. We had a few cases, not many, only maybe one or two, and we published on one when they developed renal toxicity from topical cidofovir versus Fanconi syndrome and other kind of side effects that you have to be aware of as well when you use topical.
It's a really good point, especially because these lesions can be fairly big and the skin is open, so at higher rates of absorption. And then we put it on often multiple times a day. And so that's a really important thing to consider. The toxicity of all of these therapies is significant, so that's always a concern for us.
So for this patient, I mentioned we're not really making progress. We don't have clinical improvement. What are your next steps at this point for evaluating this patient, for treating them?
So when we're thinking about refractory disease and we're switching to different therapies, as you can see in this algorithm here, right? So usually we first of all recognize the refractory HSV infection risk, and then often switch to intravenous Voscarna therapy. I always ask my pharmacist for help, and I personally always keep people in the hospital when they're on Voscarna. I don't send them home. I don't think it's safe. And then really importantly, early send resistance testing, because it can take quite a while for the resistance testing to come back, sometimes a month or even longer, and can really be problematic. And then once you have the resistance results, you know, you can see as marching through this, if it is still a cyclovir susceptible, foscarnet susceptible, then it should work to try them on either intravenous acyclovir or high dose valacyclovir, or potentially consider investigational therapies. And that's where we think about things like pertelavir when it's available. Obviously, if it's acyclovir resistance, then we probably want something like foscarnet or investigational therapy. Or if it's acyclovir susceptible, as you can see on the right-hand side of the slide, and foscarnet resistant, go with potentially intravenous cidofovir, which many of us are not really using significantly, and it could be quite challenging to get, or potentially investigational therapy.
And probably I would add, that's also the main thing when we develop this algorithm, you know, want to give alternative therapy, right? But also want to make sure the providers recognize refractory early on. And because I know in the old days when we are faced with this kind of patient with all this non-clinical, well, we keep on pushing with foscarnet or even high-dose acyclovir, and we don't know what's wrong, but recognizing refractory early on and maybe switching therapies based on genotypic testing, it could improve outcome. But we realize big unmet needs. When we have alternative therapy, very toxic drug, we need a new drug. We are safer and effective in treating this kind of scenarios, this kind of infection. That's why, you know, at least hopefully, you all probably heard about the press release that we're going to have, you know, the primary endpoint was met for pertelavir and mucocutaneous HSV resistant refractory infection. So hope is on the horizon, I would say, to have kind of oral and safe drug to treat this kind of infection. So stay tuned, more to come in the future. So,
and I would also include any good transplant infectious disease note always contains the line, please try to reduce immunosuppression as much as possible, which is easier said than done. And I think a lot of the patients that I have seen with resistant HSV are quite immunocompromised, and not necessarily by exogenous immunosuppression, but stem cell transplant or whatnot. So it's always easier said than done to reduce the immunosuppression, but that's always part of the algorithm. And thanks for highlighting the phase 3 data. I will be talking about the phase 2 data later this afternoon. I'll be speaking at 3:51 p.m. and it will be in room B213-14. So if you're interested in hearing the earlier phase 2 data, it will be presented.
Perfect. Okay, well, tell us a little bit about our patient. Unfortunately, our patient had to stop foscarnet prior to healing of lesions due to renal toxicity. The patient received imiquimod 5% cream and did also have the cidofovir 1% oral solution as adjuvant treatments. But this patient ultimately received compassionate use pertelavir and actually had complete response after about 40 days of therapy. Is there anything else that you guys can share with us with, you know, experience in cases like this?
Yeah, actually, this is one of the cases that we published in CMI recently. One of our fellows, Dali Shafat, put this picture together. And interesting, as you all know, probably phase 2 and phase 3, open label. So we could tell what patient is getting. And this is what we follow progression. And our experience, we enrolled many patients either on the phase 2, phase 3 trial or under the compassionate use program. And our experience with many patients that you see the improvement rather quickly after you switch to pertelavir. And we documented this in pictures based on the protocol and based on what we've been seeing clinically. So yeah, that's why it is an interesting, effective drug, we could tell. So it was not surprising when we saw the press release that it met the primary endpoint because we could see it firsthand, patient responding. And these patients, you know, need to keep in mind, patients who get this kind of infections with no improvement, they're very complicated. You know, this patient had many other complications. This, they're heavily immunocompromised. They have other type of infection at the same time. And you expose them to toxic drug, make their outcome probably worse. And we're talking about ultimate outcome sometimes, either oncology outcome or mortality. So having a drug which is oral drug, but it's effective and safer drug, and seeing the improvement and the impact on this kind of infection, actually, it is important for us, significant. At least we accomplished something for our patient with a new antibiotic.
And also to address, in addition to what we see clinically, but the patient experience, right? So this is incredibly painful, and people are often really suffering. It can be at multiple sites, and certainly when they're on foscarnet, that is not easy. And this is often in the setting of recent stem cell transplant or other therapies. So they're going through a lot, and I really respect the patient experience and how therapies that are much easier, like oral therapy, are easier for them with far fewer side effects. And it's really wonderful to offer them something with less toxicity and fewer complications.
You've already sort of started listing your wish list of what you would want, but what do you see on the horizon for helping us with refractory HSV? What do you hope for? I feel like that'll be a nice place to end on, and then we'll see if the audience has any questions.
So we talked about the HPI inhibitor. So one of the HPI inhibitors, which is pimetelivir, is helicase primase inhibitor, has specific mechanism of action. There's no cross-resistance. And this is important to know between HPIs versus acyclovir or even foscarnet. So this is important when you're suspecting resistance to either of the commercially available drug. At least this one you feel, you know that it's going to work with no worrying about cross-resistance. I always tell this joke that, you know, we've been working in the antiviral field for the past 20 years, myself and Camille, and we want to really bring new strategies and new agents to the market in a way to help our patients. This is so important. And, you know, and we were successful so far for CMV. And now we feel great about having a new antiviral, which is pimetelivir, hopefully, it met the primary endpoint. We'll see by next year coming to the market to help our patients. At the end, it's really about our patient going through transplant, going through cancer therapy, solid organ transplant, and we want to really help them to go through their journey in the best way possible, preventing infection, treating infection, keep them alive to recover from their underlying disease. And this is our hope. Hopefully, we get there before we retire.
With all of the amazing cancer therapies, biologic therapies for autoimmune disease, organ transplant, it's wonderful when infection can really take a back seat and have, you know, treatment and prevention can have minimal toxicity, minimal side effects, and sort of not be first and foremost. Unfortunately, many of the patients that I've cared for with refractory resistant HSV have really had the HSV be their most significant issue at that point. So it would be great if it could be well treated and take a back seat and hopefully enhance the quality of life and overall outcomes for this vulnerable population.
Add one quick thing as well that, you know, Camille mentioned a little bit. Now with a major advancement in treating hematologic malignancies, in transplant, in cellular therapy, and probably in solid organ transplant, we're going to see more and more. We're going to be faced with more challenging infectious complications because our patients are living longer, but they are more immunosuppressed, going through multiple lines of therapy to get to the last strategy, the new innovations and new strategies. So we are starting to see high acuity and severity of infection when patients get admitted, including viral infections, from CMV to herpes simplex and other. So is this unfortunately going to stay with us? We're not going to get rid of it, but we need to work hard how to prevent it better or how to add better treatment option to these patients.
You're definitely right. In the past decade, there was a survey by the CDC, and we've actually doubled the number of people in the United States who identify as immunocompromised. Now it's at 6.6% identify as immunocompromised. So we've made a lot of progress, and we've certainly seen that, but we need to make sure that we have really good preventative and therapeutic options for infectious disease in that setting. So we are really excited for the future ahead. I heard at ID Week about an HSV vaccine even that might be on the horizon. So hopefully there'll be multiple modalities and lots of ways that we can help patients.
Well, we left a little time so that if folks in the audience had questions for our guest, you may just, if you can shout it to me and I'll repeat it, or you can walk up to the front, or we can hand a mic if we need to. Any questions that folks have?
Thank you so much. We come from Florida, Miami. Thank you. My question is about the cidofovir. How do you mix it and how you apply it?
Cidofovir needs to be compounded. So you need to have a compounding pharmacy, or my inpatient pharmacy had previously done that. But it's actually really challenging. At least it's been in my clinical experience. I don't know what yours has been, but it's actually really hard to get compounding done and then covered by insurance. And it seems shockingly challenging, like a couple thousand dollars to get a relatively small amount. Our pharmacists were always yelling at me saying, use very little and don't wipe it off, because it's actually sort of liquid gold. But there are some compounding pharmacies that can take care of that for you.
Yeah. And I want to add also, yeah, I totally agree. And you have to make sure you get the right concentration, because I remember one patient messed up, give them higher concentration, and they got into trouble with that. But also, the question is, does it work? We don't know, right? So topical cidofovir or Imiquimod, we use it because we have no other alternative. We want to do whatever it takes for our patient, and we try that. But I don't know. I'm not sure. Because we always use it in combination with other drugs as well, with all the other drugs that are available. So something you have to keep in mind as well.
Hi, here I'm Nadim from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Question about a patient who would have been on Valtrex suppression for genital HSV, now suddenly starts having multiple outbreaks. The management of this patient, are you thinking this is now getting into a resistance zone, or what should we do next? And what are the treatment options for someone like that?
So, yeah. So the question is about having outbreak of herpes simplex on multiple occasions and what to do. So, yeah, and when we see this quite often, unfortunately, I have one patient following in the clinic. She come every month. It's like unbelievable, like at the same time of the month where she has an outbreak. So what I did initially, you know, you put her on prophylaxis again, and you test for resistance, no resistance, refractory. That's the underlying cyclic neutropenia. That's why she get them when. But even on suppressive therapy, sometimes it doesn't work. So what I did, I increased the dose of, it's not really prophylaxis anymore. You know, it's not like 1 gram a day. I put them first on 1 gram twice a day and then 3 times a day, because it was a repeating outbreak every month. And it's still happening, unfortunately. Now, the last time it happened because she did not take the prophylaxis. So, I had to, sometimes it is hard. We don't know what to do. Except increasing the dose of cyclovir.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's just that sometimes you will have full resistance, and then we need a better preventative option. And I don't think most of us would be giving like cidofovir every 2 weeks, as was done for CMV. I mean, that's really toxic. So that's really a huge unmet need, is the ongoing prophylaxis situation for somebody who really needs it. I will say, on a stewardship front, I usually try to stop the acyclovir as soon as it seems safe. I do find some people who are on acyclovir for a very long period of time. So I do try to stop and hopefully decrease the risk of resistance. Although we don't really know about whether it's better to be on prophylaxis versus stop and then treat. We often think that when we're treating, it might be a trigger, at least for CMV, a higher risk for developing resistance. But it's a problematic situation. But we're cautiously optimistic that on the horizon, there'll be, you know, options for both treatment of resistant disease and potentially prophylaxis of resistant disease. So it's a great question, and we're hopeful for the future.
Any other questions?
I'll open it back up to you guys. Yeah. I was going to say, for kind of some closing thoughts.
Yeah, so maybe closing thoughts.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah. So we covered the main thing I would say from what we presented is make sure you use the definitions of refractory, although it's meant only for clinical trial use, but I think it's helpful. I hear it from many people throughout the country and from everywhere that it helped them at the bedside as well. Because, you know, we developed this definition based on our clinical experience. Because it's hard. If you look at the literature, it's all over the place how people define refractory infections, not only herpes simplex, maybe other viral infection as well. So at least we have something more standardized, can help us at the bedside. This way we can realize, or we can recognize refractory early on. We're always good to switch therapy early on, then later on when it is progressing or disseminating or having new lesion, it will be harder to treat. And, you know, so we talked about that. And now we talked also about the, hopefully, a new HPI or helicase primase inhibitor coming to the market, which is pilatinib. Hopefully, we're hoping next year. Now the data is under analysis and we're looking forward to see the data published in the future on this new strategy.
Definitely. It's a great time to be in transplant ID. Mm-hmm. We've had multiple new agents for CMV, you know, letemovir, which has been a game changer for prophylaxis, and then maribavir for resistant refractory disease. And hopefully on the horizon, we'll have new therapies for refractory resistant HSV. And we definitely welcome more tools in the toolbox.
Well, I just want to say thank you again for this. For those of you who are here, we have some febrile stickers in the front and a few minutes in the room. So if you do have questions, please feel free to come up and say hello. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Happy to be back with you in action on febrile. Don't forget to check out the website, febrilepodcast.com, where you can find our consult notes, which are written complements to the episodes with links to references, our library of ID infographics, and a link to our merch store. Febrile is produced with support from the Infectious Diseases Society of America, IDSA. Please reach out if you have any suggestions for future shows or want to be more involved with Febrile. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and I'll see you next time.